Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard, your host. Richard Dugan, your host. I've got a first name and a last name, folks. And we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com, as well as archiving the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we are also going to give you a link to our guest's website. Websites, locations, videos, all kinds of good stuff that is going to help you get through the coming year. So we certainly hope that you will join us for the program today. I think it's going to be very interesting. A returning guest, Kathy Groover. I cannot say you are not a doctor. Is that correct? Or are you?
I have a PhD. I am not a medical doctor.
Not a medical doctor. Okay, so I can say doctor, mm-hmm. Kathy Groover.
You can.
Not MD.
Right.
Okay. All right. Very good. Welcome back.
Thanks. Happy to be back.
It's good to have you here. We always have very interesting conversations when we talk. But before we do that, I would like for you to give what they call the old elevator pitch of who you are to those people who are just tuning in for the first time. And by the way, for those who are tuning in for the first time, if when Kathy gives this information and we give a website and so forth, check out the videos. I saw one of these videos. You've got your own TV program. Unbelievable. I don't know who you are connected with, but from the last time I saw you, you were like a mega corporation now. You're huge. Here, to quote an individual, you're huge.
Please don't quote him.
I'm sorry. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about Kathy Groover, how you came to the PhD, how you mm-hmm. came to dealing with folks, health and wellness. And your personality is such, maybe similar to mine, that you come across informative. And in a manner of speaking, sort of forceful, okay, or direct, maybe that's it, mm-hmm. or assertive, I'm not sure, but it's in a good way. It's in a very good way. Tell us.
Yeah, I started out as a massage therapist. Actually, if you take a step back, I started out as an actor and then moved into massage therapy. I had this parallel path of massage and healing that sort of followed me through my life. The acting thing was thrown in there. I studied massage when I was in college, completely accidentally, but that ended up what stuck with me. And when I moved up here to Santa Barbara, I started my own massage practice. So that's been 16 years here in Santa Barbara.
Wow.
And I now do hypnotherapy. And I found that as I was working on clients, they were looking at me more as a health practitioner than just a massage therapist. Like, they wanted to know about their uncle's heart disease and their kid's autism and how could I help. And I've always been obsessed with learning. I would still be in school to this day if I could. And so I started studying more and more and got my master's and PhD. And I studied mind-body medicine at Harvard 5 or 6 times. Amazing program there. And then I started writing. And then I started lecturing. The acting thing came thrown back in as I do my live talks. And
I saw your TED Talk.
Oh, thank you. My TEDx. Yeah, I'm so excited about that.
That was cool.
It was really
great
fun.
Great passion. I envied you your trip, although I would have gone the other side of the Irish Sea, but that's a whole nother. Although that where you were was incredible.
Oh, dream come true. And for it to be my first, what I'm talking about is I tell a story about going to England the first time and how I ended up getting stranded. And there's a whole lesson from that. So, yeah, I talk in my TED Talk, my TEDx, I tell 3 stories, one about getting stranded in England, one about a woman that had to fire an employee, and the other one about doing flying trapeze, because that's what I do for fun.
When I flew back to Phoenix and I was coming back and they were gonna bump some people because they had to put us on a smaller plane. Mm. I thought, okay, if they make the offer really well, I just might do it. And I'm looking at the whole trip at that point as it's just an adventure.
Yeah.
Just an adventure. Hey, I don't know who I could wind up in Bangor, Maine. Who cares? You know, it's an adventure. Who knows who I'll meet?
Absolutely. And so. I love when we look at life that way, because I have found, and you say, who do I know that's helping with all this? I bust my butt. And anybody that knows me knows I am so driven and so work-based when it comes to things like that, which is why I allow myself dance class and trapeze and travel and wine tasting with the husband and all this stuff, mm-hmm. because there has to be that place of balance.
But and you don't sleep is what you're telling us.
I sleep 8 hours a night.
Wow.
I know. People assume I'm up. Like, no, I think I get more time in the day than everyone else. I don't know how that works. But But no, I get a lot. I got a lot done. Yeah. That is definitely one in my skill set. But yeah, the speaking is really my main focus. So I've been around the world doing talks, and yeah. I love doing it. It's the acting thing coming back. Yeah. Same stage, different outfit. I tell people.
Well, folks, she's already got the massage table on wheels outside the studio. So as soon as we're done, the guy's going to be on the table, ready to go, and they'll be rolling down the street as she does the massage, so she can get right back to work.
Pretty much back to my office.
I have to say that. People ask me, as I'm 57 now, so when are you thinking maybe you'll retire? And I say, well, the only retiring that I will be doing will be on whatever the vehicle is that I happen to own at the time. And right now it's a Volvo. So that's the only retiring I will do. As I like to say, it's a little graphic, they're going to have to pull my cold dead carcass off the console. Okay? So I have no plans on doing that. I hope that I can maintain the physical agility and flexibility and so forth into my 90s. I have to outlive my grandmother, my great-grandmother on my mother's side, who was 100 years old.
Wow.
Now it's back in Phoenix. She lived to be 100. Mm-hmm. I started saying that when she was 95 and telling them, and she's making it really hard because she's living and living, which is great. And not that I wanted her to die, but it's like, okay, I've got my work cut out for me.
Yeah.
But that's what we all want. We all want, regardless of our age, whether you're a child, a teen, in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it doesn't matter what the year is, you want to be able to have that quality of life. Mm-hmm. And we started out talking before we began this interview about the wide and diverse numbers, and they're just coming out like gnats in the summertime, these documentaries in opposition to our food supply and the healthcare industry and obesity and all of these, and the diabetes and the heart disease and on and on and on and on and on. And I know that I have a problem with them, and so do you, because each individual documentary takes a particular slant, one particular slant, mm-hmm. and goes extreme off into that in that direction.
Yeah,
it doesn't. We haven't really seen one that's really kind of balanced. But then again, that's what gets people to watch, is the extremism.
Sure,
you know, we saw that in our past election, is extremism, and we see it when people listen to radio programs or watch television programs. They watch either because they love it or they hate it, but it's because of the extremism, you know, and the drama. But I'm tired of the drama in my health care, in my health and well-being, I should put it that way. I want to avoid having to go into the doctor. I don't even want to go in for my physical, because it's one of those things, you know how if you take your car into the mechanic, you say, well, I need you to check the right front area of the car, which they will do, mm-hmm. but then they'll look around in other areas that you didn't ask them to look, and they'll find other stuff.
Yeah, but don't you want them to find that stuff?
For a long time, I didn't want to know.
Oh, well, that's if a whole other thing.
If I had, well, it is. I've shifted a little bit, because when I started to find out about the hypertension, and I started to find out about, like, for example, I had knee surgery and torn meniscus, mm-hmm. had that done, and man, it's been great ever since. So we do need to know. Mm-hmm. But I guess the problem I have is in that it's almost like, God, don't tell me it's the C word. I don't want to hear the C word. Or whatever it is that you're the most afraid of, mm-hmm. when you go in to see the doctor and you have tests and diagnostic and you have the blood work done and so on and so forth. You just want a clean bill of health.
Sure. But you still need to know.
You still need to know. So that's where we kind of want to start.
Yep.
Is how do you counsel people, whether it's through the television programs or on a one-on-one practitioner basis, to optimize their health? Let's just put it that way. How do you do that? How do you get them to help them to optimize their health from where it happens to be right now?
Yeah, it's actually pretty simple. We've made it so complicated. And it goes back to those basics of natural medicine, that basic of naturopathy, which is eat good food, drink clean water, breathe, move your body, move your bowels. Really simple. Mm-hmm. We've complicated that because one or more of those five aspects is not being met. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're not eating really good food that throws everything else off, because now you're also not having bowel movements. You're not drinking water. You're drinking soda. You're not sleeping well. You're not taking deep breaths. You have this shallow breathing. You know, all of this compounds on itself. It's the same thing with taking care of your car. You have to check your fluids. You have to put oil in. You have to put the gas in. You have to check the air in the tires. If you start to ignore one or more of those things, it's going to affect the whole rest of how the vehicle runs.
Yeah.
So it's pretty simple, but we've gotten so far away from it. And part of it is our healthcare system. Part of it is our go-go-go society where people aren't taking time to move their body. We don't spend the 15 minutes in the bathroom in the morning to have a normal, healthy bowel movement. It's go! And then you're off to the next thing.
15 minutes?
Or however long.
I don't even spend that much time brushing my teeth, which I could do while I'm sitting there.
Right. Multitasking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a client that keeps dumbbells next to the toilet, and she does curls while she's doing her other business.
Well, there are people who have libraries in their bathrooms.
Sure.
Which isn't a bad thing.
Well, and we used to, you know, that used to be the make fun of, you know, dad disappears into the bathroom for a half hour every morning, you know.
Yeah.
He was probably actually having a healthy bowel movement.
Yeah.
And how
do
we get on poop so early?
I don't know. Well,
have to talk about that.
Do. And here's, I want to kind of dovetail into something else. It was at the age of 55, that I had a colonoscopy. Now, at 50, I had the smaller version, the endoscopy.
Endoscopy goes further, actually.
Oh, okay. Then I had that one at 55, and the first one, which only went up, went up, you know, 5 feet, whereas the other one went 40 feet.
Right.
Now, I did that at 55. Now, the one at 50, they didn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
But at 55, they found a tiny, 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 like a millimeter or less little thing, which they took out and they tested benign.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, well, you know, they always tell you every 10 years, and mine was starting at 50, I should have had the endoscopy was the big one.
Yeah, colonoscopy they recommend starting at 50, and you do that every, I can't remember if it's every 5 or every 10.
I heard it was 10.
Depending on what your family history is.
Right.
If you have a history of colon cancer and issues, then I think you want to do it more frequently. Endoscopy is something I don't think that's a normal thing that they do. I think that's a more advanced test,
I think. Well, anyway, they did that at 55. They found that little thing. Mm-hmm. Out it went. And it was benign.
Mm-hmm.
However, I started thinking, well, what if I'd had the big one at 50 and then waited the 10 years? So now I'm at 60. That tiny little thing that they found at 55, you know, so I think, well, I kind of delayed and I didn't do it and I waited and I waited. And finally I said, well, you know, okay. It wasn't that I was afraid of it. It was just, you know, the finding time, you know. And so I also think, too, that our own intuition, you're familiar with kinesiology, I'm sure.
Sure.
They call it muscle testing,
mm-hmm.
and lots of other things, which I learned many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This woman by the name of Carol Kepler in Phoenix, Arizona, she taught me, you take your thumb and your forefinger and you loop the two hands together and you say yes and then you say no. And it comes apart if you say no. And if you say yes, it stays together, the links.
Yeah.
And then you start testing stuff in the
store.
But you don't really need that because your intuition is going to tell you what you really need.
Right.
I saw a piece, and this is where I'm going with this. I saw a piece where you were talking with this one gal or this group of people about magnesium.
Mm.
If you commented on how, well, you know, it's kind of weird. It's pretty obvious I would have a favorite mineral.
Favorite mineral, yep.
And it's magnesium because it's found in chocolate. And most women, stereotypically, love chocolate. Because of the manganese, the body's craving
magnesium.
It. I beg your pardon, magnesium. Because the body's craving it for whatever reasons, the chemistry, is that a fair barometer for us to use when choosing things to eat each day is maybe a craving?
Yeah, absolutely. When we need minerals, we crave snack foods. And chocolate and crunchy, salty things.
Mm-hmm.
If an animal is craving minerals, he goes and chews on a fence. Okay, we don't have the option of going and chewing on a fence, so we grab potato chips or we grab Doritos or we grab nachos or, you know, it's that salty, crunchy thing that we want that because we're deficient in things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found when we're craving things, it tends to be an indication that we're deficient in something. And because magnesium drops during levels of stress, magnesium also takes a drastic drop during migraines, which is fascinating because taking magnesium helps with headaches, muscle cramps, menstrual cramps, PMS symptoms, sleep, mood, heart issues. I mean, you know, that covers so much stuff, bowel health. So I think you're absolutely right. I think when we're craving things, we are absolutely looking for that in the food. However, we don't typically crave the right food. I mean, we don't need the
chips.
That's the problem. We need minerals. Mm-hmm. And this is why mm-hmm. I recommend, that's the first thing I recommend people do, is take a really high quality vitamin and mineral supplement. We're deficient in things. Our soils are not that great. And no matter how good you eat, I and many other people believe you're not getting enough. Now, you've got to take a good vitamin and mineral.
That's not, the hard part for a lot of folks, is not, knowing what's the good stuff.
Well, if you can get it at Costco for $1.99 and there's a 300-day supply, it's probably not going to do it for you.
Isn't it also true that the capsules and the tablets, that kind of thing, they take so long to absorb that by the time they work their way through your bowels and out, they're still almost a capsule. They don't absorb in the same fashion. Is that, or has that been changed a little bit?
You know, we could spend 5 hours on vitamins, and I know that you want to try to avoid the synthetic ones. You want to try to get the natural, whole food, organic vitamins. I like one called Alive because it's a liquid. Now, it looks like seaweed, but it tastes sort of like Tang, if you remember what that tastes like. Mm-hmm. And you can either shoot it in the cup and then go, and make the face and then drink something else. And the taste goes away quickly. You don't have that. The taste doesn't stay in your mouth. So if you buy this and you drink it, don't yell at me later. But it goes away pretty fast. But I like it because it's got amino acids and it's got minerals and it's all natural. It's from food. I love that. There's a bunch of people who push Juice Plus and, you know, all these sort of, you know, tiered marketing things that may or may not have great products. But I take magnesium pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you and I are on Facebook together. I joked yesterday about, you know, my body said, boy, I'd really like chocolate. What it didn't mean is please go to the liquor store next door and get a Kit Kat. It was disgusting. And I really regretted it. But I realized, I haven't been taking my magnesium. I think that's probably what I need. So I started back on magnesium this morning.
All right. So let me ask you that then. All right. Your body isn't craving a Kit Kat.
No,
or a Twix.
It's a bad choice.
No. It's craving the chocolate. So then if I'm going to have a supply of chocolate, or maybe more to the point, if I'm craving the chocolate, I need to have the magnesium. The magnesium on
manganese
hand.
Manganese is a thing, but it's, I don't
right,
think it's
the wrong thing.
It's the wrong thing.
you're better off to have the magnesium on hand rather than a box of chocolate somewhere.
Or
a block of milk chocolate or dark chocolate.
But there are health benefits and antioxidants in really high quality cacao.
Okay.
I didn't go with that. I was at my office where the nearest thing was, hey, a liquor store. They've got chocolate. Kit Kat sounds good. I haven't had one of those in a long time. Oh, that's why I haven't had one of those in a long time. It was kind of gross.
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel good after eating it, which I'm not a snacker. I don't do fast food. I don't do junk food. I don't do stuff like that. So every once in a while, if I have something like that, I kind of go, okay, well, you know, this is not your normal thing. Go have it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 5 times out of 10, I go, I didn't really like that.
My big disaster is sodas.
Oh,
I've gotten so much better, though. Mm-hmm. Now, when I do go any place and I order one, I usually will order a small. And I fill the cup completely with ice. That's what I've always done. Even the largest has always been full of ice. So at least the level of the amount of fluid that I'm putting into the cup is less than. Whereas a lot of people, they'll put the fluid in first and then 3 or 4 ice cubes. And even if I don't, for example, I was at a fast food place just the other day and I asked for a small soda. And I filled it up with ice and then the soda. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing there waiting for my thing and, there it is. Thank you very much. I was half through with the small soda, and I threw it away. Oh. And so I said, well, yeah, but you're throwing away money. I says, you know what? I'd rather do that and sort of quell that craving in that respect short term than the ramifications down the road. Because I used to have a cup holder on my bicycle where I used to bicycle everywhere in Phoenix. And I could fit a 64-ounce a big gulp type glass in it.
Yeah.
All right. So I would go into the Circle K or the 7-Eleven. I would fill it up with ice and then the beverage. And then I could bicycle all over town with this cup holder on the handlebars, just tune along to take a sip. And it was great, as opposed to a water bottle or something like that. we have to, as individuals, we do have to find our own way. We have to find our what works best for us. What are your thoughts as far as all of these different nutritional suggestions? I'm not going to say diets, but nutritional suggestions made by major medical universities or big doctors, you know, who will come out with a book and who will come out with a book saying, this is the direction that you should go. My father, who is still alive, 86 years old. Why do I keep wanting to add degrees? I don't know. He always told me, eat, drink, and be merry because no one gets out of, in moderation, because nobody gets out of this world alive.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
I think we're all biologically individual, and what works for me might not work for you, might not work for the next guy, might not work for the next guy. And this is one of the problems I have with those documentaries that we were talking about before we got on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about one specifically that was encouraging this plant-based diet. I am not a fan of everybody being vegetarian or vegan. It does not work. It does not work for me. I tried it. I did it right. I got my other proteins from other sources, and I've never been so sick.
Mm.
I was so pale you could see through me, and I'm pretty pale anyway. I lost so much weight, people actually thought I had an eating disorder. I would stand up and fall right back down.
Mm.
I need meat. When I started dreaming about chicken, I thought, okay, this is ridiculous. This is not healthy for my body. I'm a very fast metabolizer. I need meat. That's what I have found. I know myself incredibly well. And so often these documentaries put people in two categories. Either you're a fat slob eating at fast food every three meals a day, or you're a healthy vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I found a lot of these documentaries say. I think that's crap. You can be a healthy meat eater. It doesn't have to be this extreme on either side.
Yeah.
And I think that coerces people into, oh, I saw this thing and I better be a vegetarian. And so they throw out all their meat and they go to the store and they buy all this fake soy meat thinking they're being healthier. And that stuff is processed. It's been GMO unless it's organic. I mean, it's not good for you either.
Yeah.
I think we have to know ourselves, and one of the problems with that is we don't. We can describe to the auto mechanic that noise our car makes when we go up a hill in the rain on a Saturday,
mm-hmm.
but we can't tell our practitioners what's happening in our own body. We don't know. We don't know if drinking that soda feels good or not. It probably doesn't, and if you give it up for a while, you'll go back to it and realize, ooh, this feels terrible. I have so many clients that have given up certain foods for Lent, and then they come back to it after that, was it 40 days? And they can't stand drinking it anymore because their body, it's too sweet, it gives them a headache, it's too syrupy, whatever it is. We need to know ourselves. That's the issue.
Oh, well, first of all, let me just say that I do know some people who can have a conversation with you in private about these chicken dreams, if you'd like. And second of all, this aspect of these cravings, I have actually found some, over the course of the last few years, some nice alternatives to sodas. I still have one occasionally, but seltzer water.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, as far as alcoholic beverages now, there is a what they call a hard seltzer water.
I know.
Okay.
It's gross.
Well, it is. However, I also buy the tart cherry juice. This is organic. I get it at Whole Foods.
Yep.
And I mix it in with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, the first time I did that and I drank it, it was so, strangely enough, it was so refreshing. Now, the alcohol isn't that strong. I'm not getting any kind of a buzz.
Right.
But what I am getting is that fizz that I like.
Sure.
Okay?
But you could get that in regular soda. And I've actually advised clients to do that if they want to give up the soda. I said, go buy one of those home soda machines.
Yeah.
Make your own healthy soda. Now, make sure it doesn't have artificial sweetener in it.
Right.
Because I have a big problem with that as well. That's my problem with the sodas. It's either the high fructose corn syrup, which is terrible for us, or the artificial sweetener, which is terrible for us.
Yeah.
So if you have one as a treat every once in a while, that's what soda was actually made for.
Yeah.
The soda, I love this. I'm such a nerd when it comes to medical stuff, that there were soda fountains in the pharmacies because when you got your medication, the medicine tasted so horrible that you would then walk across the room to the soda fountain and chase it with the sweet fruit-flavored soda.
Yeah.
That's why we had sodas. It was not meant to be a beverage you drank all day long.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I was hugely into Mountain Dew. I loved Mountain Dew. I mm-hmm. had Mountain Dew breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's what I drank when I was in college and when I moved to California. I didn't know any better. Yeah. And I didn't realize until I stopped drinking it, oh, that's why I'm not sleeping. That's why I have yeah. headaches. That's why I didn't put those together. And unfortunately, our doctors typically aren't going to have that conversation with us. They're not going to go over everything you eat and drink yeah. to connect that's why you're getting the headaches or the heart palpitations yeah. or the insomnia, you know.
So Mary Poppins was right. A spoonful of sugar does help the medicine go down.
It does. That's what that was there for.
Well, I find all of this very fascinating. Of course, we're covering a lot of ground in a very short period of time because we don't have an abundance of time. But we're going to have you back again because the phrase is, if you have your health, you have everything, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I've also heard this from other practitioners that, if your feet hurt, you hurt all over. And I can attest to that fact because when my feet have hurt, I don't like going walking. And I love walking, mm-hmm. especially because of the fact that here in Santa Barbara, I can walk 20 minutes and I'm at the ocean. I can walk for 20 days from Phoenix and I might be at the ocean. But I love the ability to be able to, under my own power, my own locomotion, get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
Or just meander wherever I want to meander. Maybe I'll jump on the trolley and I'll go 5 or 6 blocks and then I'll get off and turn left and turn right, what have you. I love walking down to the end of the wharf. I love walking along the breakwater.
Mm-hmm.
I love walking at the base of the cliffs along Shoreline Drive. I mean, it's just fantastic to be able to do those kinds of things.
Yep.
But when my feet were hurting or my knees.
Sure.
Oh, man. I was less frustrated over the pain and discomfort and more frustrated over the fact that I couldn't get out and
right.
walk.
Right. That's really tough. And I have clients who, you know, maybe they were runners and then they blew out a knee and they can't run anymore. So rather than finding something to substitute for that, and I actually told my father used to be very athletic. He was the first one on the basketball court. He was the first one outside playing football with us kids, throwing the baseball around, running around the yard with us. And as he started aging, things started getting hurt. So, oh, okay, he tore his rotator cuff. Okay, so no more throwing the football. Okay, I guess basketball's out. Oh, okay, well, he has 2 bad knees. Okay, so walking's out. Okay, he has no Achilles on one foot. Okay, so that's out. Oh, he's got a lung problem. Okay, so he can't swim anymore. And suddenly, all these things that he could do to help him lose that weight were taken off the table.
Mm.
And I told him, I said, Dad, I can kind of relate to that. I said, I can't do kickboxing anymore because I had broken my finger doing trapeze and so I can't punch without the risk of really harming that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, my shoulder sometimes gives me trouble. So that's the swimming doesn't feel very good. I said, I can't do push-ups because it hurts my elbow. I said, so I'm kind of getting, and he just started laughing. And he said, okay, see, now you get it. And I do.
I
can see how when you're starting to take those activities off the table,
man.
But you've got to find something.
Yeah, because there's
something that works for you.
You could have said, well, you know, Dad, they do shoot horses, don't they?
Yeah, that's not what he wants to hear.
No, that's not what he wants to hear.
But,
and you don't
and I was encouraging him to get back in the pool and to
absolutely.
Do what, you know, whether it's a stationary bike or a recumbent bike or an arm bike.
The pool is a great idea.
Yeah.
It really is because you're not stressing the joints and the muscles, but you're definitely flexing and exercising both.
Such great exercise. And some people, they're allergic to the chlorine. Or that, you know, I have, we can find an excuse for anything. And sometimes they're valid excuses.
Yeah.
You know, I have seasonal asthma, and sometimes being at the Y with the chlorine, it irritates my asthma. So I have to take my inhaler in with me. I know that. I've adapted to that. But you've got to find something. We have to move our bodies. We're not made to be stationary.
I have wanted for the first 8 or 9 years living here in Santa Barbara, I have wanted to go out into the water. I mean, just get out there, not necessarily on a board or anything, but literally just walk out up to my neck in the water and just kind of float along with the current, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully don't get swept out to sea. And I did that one day. I went down to Goleta Beach, and I had a baseball cap and my sunglasses because, you know, I that's what I need, and I can't remember if I put sunscreen on or not, t-shirt and swim trunks, and I was actually wearing a pair of rock shoes. You know, I figured that probably a good idea because who knows what I'm going to be walking on as I'm walking out there. And I was having the grandest of times. And I was out there for, I don't know, maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, and I walk out and I dry off and da-da-da, and I go about my business. And then all of a sudden, I'm talking with some people about this, and they say, "Yeah, but haven't you heard? You know that tsunami that swamped that nuclear power plant in Japan. That radiation's in the Pacific, and it's over here now. You really shouldn't go in the water." I says, "What? Now I need to take a Geiger counter with me to the beach?" And of course, I've even argued this when it comes to eating food. It's like, well, it's all energy. What difference does it make? And then, of course, as a Reiki master, I know, too, that I was trained to do this. I haven't done it in a long time because I just kind of feel like, man, I just by my presence, I'm, you know, energizing the food with Reiki energy, to make it healthy and what have you for my body. And it's like, I don't want to live a paranoid life.
Right.
Where I've got to, because seeing some of these documentaries that I've seen, I'm sitting here going, yeah, I'm gonna take the one guy in the TV series Barney Miller. They had a guy in the cell, and he was, he says, what are you doing? You know, this guy's asking him. The detective asks him, and he says, well, I'm eating. What do you mean you're eating? He says, I'm a breatharian. To which the guy outside the cell says, well, save some for the rest of us, because he was just sucking it in. And I'm thinking, that's all that's left. And even that's not good for you because, you know, of different pollutants in the air and so forth. And it's like it drives some, it can drive you nuts because everybody's telling you. And then there's the, this week, coffee is bad for you.
Right.
Next week, coffee will be good for you. The following week, coffee will be bad. The following week, and it just goes back. And Italian food and cassava melons and avocados. And then, like I said, when I saw that one documentary where they talked about chicken, I about died because I love chicken. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we buy organic almost all the time. I'd say probably 95 to 99% of the time. And I think, well, okay, because I'm hoping that they don't inject the flesh with salt water, like the, according to the documentary they do in Tyson or wherever it is that they do this. I get to the point where, again, I go back to what my father said, eat, drink, and be merry in moderation because no one gets out of this world alive. We're all going to die. Now,
yep.
I understand I don't want to sit in a room for the next 20 years, eating Twinkies. Okay, I get that. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But there has to be a balance, a middle ground.
Yep. And you can find research online to support anything.
Yep.
Any aspect of it. And then there's, you know, Paranoid Joe's blog about all these conspiracies and about the most horrible things that could possibly have happened. Well, go in the water. There's no radiation in the water in California from the tsunami. It doesn't even make any sense. The fish, people get about the mercury. There is so little of that in our fish right now. The benefits of eating the fish outweigh the risk of mercury. Because if you read the most horrific studies on everything, you're right. You might as well just curl up in a room and die because there's nothing left to eat, drink, and do.
Yeah.
You know, I do flying trapeze for fun. I think it's a blast. Mm-hmm. I go down to Santa Monica. I fly. I've been doing it for 4 years. And I have people go, oh, my God, that's so dangerous. And it's like, yep, everything's dangerous. I was hit by a car in a crosswalk. You know, we're living in California. The building could come down right now in an earthquake. Something is going to kill us.
Yeah.
Live the best life you can. Exactly. Stay in this present moment. Love people. Eat the best food you can. Breathe deeply. You know, it's like just, like I said, the very first thing, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
We can be
yeah.
paranoid about everything.
Yeah.
Or we can just use our head, be logical, use some common sense, which apparently is completely gone out of this world, and just make good choices.
That's it right there.
That's all it is.
Yeah. That's it right there. Kathy Groove is my guest. We're going to continue talking. When we get back, I want to talk about your travels and how it also relates. I've got some other questions in that line of thinking. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you for being with us, along with Kathy Groover. Kathy, Your website is KathyGruver.com, is that right?
It is KathyGruver.com, and I also have thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. So I've got
which is also a television program.
It is.
That is so cool. How did that? Well, you were an actor before all of this started, so you know this is no big deal for you. But it's exciting because you have a platform to share all this great information.
Yeah, we're hoping it gets on the air soon. It's been a long process. It's that hurry up and wait thing, and the network is in reorganization, so all of the footage is uploaded and it's ready to go. There's that last hurdle. Yeah, so we're hoping it's on soon because they're amazing episodes.
How many?
We did 50 segments.
Oh, my.
I know.
Okay, how long are these segments?
So they're from 5 to 7 minutes.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah, they can either be
little bite-sized.
Strung together as a full show.
Yeah.
They can be put, yeah. So we did it that way specifically because if you do a 23-minute program, it's harder to cut it up than it was to take segments and pile them on top of each other. So yeah, it covers everything. And I did 10 shows with guests, which was actually a blast.
Cool.
I loved interviewing people. It was so much fun. That was my original format idea, was to do an hour show. That's what I pitched. An hour show with interview with da-da-da-da. So,
I know of what you speak and how you feel. Yes, I do.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, I've been doing this program for over 10 years, interviewing people for almost 40, and it's just phenomenal the kind of information that's out there. And even before the computer age came in, for me anyway, in the early mid-90s, as far as public accessibility, there were still people that, you know, you go, really? You're talking about that? Are you serious? Okay. All right. I'm giving you the platform. People have a right to hear your perspective. It's important because there may be people who may agree with you, and there may be people who disagree, and there may be people who agree with you that after hearing you go, wait a minute, I'm doing that. I think I'll stop doing it. They have a right to the information.
Absolutely.
From the horse's mouth. And that's one of the things that has always bothered me about for the internet. You just don't know who's putting it up there. It may say so-and-so's website. I may have all kinds of information about the person, supposedly who it's about, but that may not be the person who's running it.
Right. And the thing that really bothers me about it is there's this anonymity now that, you know, if I stand up in front of people and I give a live talk and you don't like what I'm saying, you have the ability to stand up during, you know, at the end of my talk and say, hey, you know, I actually disagree with that. What about this? Or what, do you have any research to back that up? Or you're an idiot or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I have the opportunity to say, oh, well, let me explain that to you. Because I love having dialogue. I have clients here who they're staunch Republican, they're staunch Democrat, they're somewhere in between, and I love having conversations with them where we can come from a place of truth and honesty and ration and logic, and we're not yelling at each other and we're not saying the other one's wrong. It's just a different perspective, and I've had so many conversations where it ends with me or that other person going, oh, I never thought about that. You know, I still don't agree with you, but that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
On the internet, I put up an article and I suddenly get all these anonymous comments of just this horrible, hateful language where there's no face to that. There's no way to respond to that logically. There's no dialogue that comes from that. It's just people spewing negativity and hate. And that's what really drives me crazy about the internet. Because you wouldn't stand up during my talk and say it in that way.
No.
But everyone's hiding under, you know, Gordo 57. Bravo, you know, and it's like, but why do you get to do that? You know, that's it's not only the where this information come from, but it's the people who now have the ability to respond to that in such a negative, horrible way.
I think that's what bothers me too, especially about some of these. This is slightly off topic, and we're not going in that direction, but this is an example. These extremist groups around the world who wear these black hoods. Why aren't you proud of what you're doing? That you can't show your face? You should be proud. Show your face so that everybody can see you just before you blow up, you know, and kill 500 people or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand that. It's like, and so to me, it'd be the same thing as these people who criticize you on the internet. It's like, wait a minute. Why are you ashamed of your particular perspective?
Right.
You know, are you afraid that someone might come after you? Like you're coming after them?
Right. Interesting, yeah.
I mean, come on. Let's get serious here and be honest and say, you know, now I also believe that there is an element that should be exercised of courtesy and tact.
Yes.
You know, you don't just say like some people, what's coming off at the top of your head without any kind of internal editing, at least a little.
Right.
And consideration for others. You know, everybody's saying, well, we can't have PC, you know, political correctness anymore. It's wrong. I understand your frustration. Mm-hmm. However, you also have to understand the sensibilities of other people. There are ways of phrasing things where you can get your point across without attacking someone or something.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of what's happened in just about every arena, especially when it comes to health and well, our health and welfare, is, you know, that this is my observation from the past couple of years. One side would be absolutely overjoyed and ecstatic if the other side just disappeared. And both sides think this, okay? That if the opposition were gone, my God, this would be a glorious place.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Because that's the impression that I get. You know, you disagree with me, you die.
Right.
Go away. Never exist. Because this would be paradise on earth if your people's, you people, and your ideas weren't there. It's like, okay. I wonder, thinking of innovations that we've had in our industrialized world and our technological advances, I wonder if you were able to track whether it be the religious, economic, or political, what have you, bent of an individual who invented a particular thing, and then it was built on by someone else, and you track that, and someone. I wonder how many of these inventions would even exist if the other side didn't exist.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it's really sad. It really is. But I also think, too, that a lot of what we're doing to our bodies is contributing to this whole this angst. I don't think it's strictly emotional. I think that what we are taking into our bodies, food and liquid, you know, solid and liquid, that isn't good for us, is altering our chemistry that is not allowing us to converse in a rational and humane way. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. Well, I think there was a study done a while back about prisoners and nutrition, and they looked at some of the most violent offenders, and there was some glitch in their system where they couldn't process certain nutrients, and I don't remember what it is, but when you gave them that nutrient, the violent tendencies went away. It was fascinating. I wish I could remember what it was. I can't remember if it was some of the B vitamins or something. Someone listening is remembering the study along with me. But it's so interesting, you know, and you look at kids with ADD, how much of that is nutrition, how much of that is chemistry, how much of that is the pollution that the mom ingested from being in this environment. And, you know, again, it goes to that extreme of what is that base point of logic and reason. And, you know, I don't know how they expect kids to learn, given the nutritional or lack thereof
deficiencies
of what some of these inner city kids are getting.
Yeah.
And I have clients who, unfortunately, because they've fallen into this bubble of they're wealthy, they can buy whatever food they want, they give their kids whatever they need, which is fabulous, but they forget that there's people around the country that don't have that.
Yeah.
And I did a radio show where I was actually on a panel, which was weird to be on a panel on a radio show. And we had all called in, so I couldn't see any of the people I was talking to. And this woman went off about, well, you know, if we would all just buy organic, and you need to go meet your local farmer, and you need to get to... And I said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm calling BS. I said, that's complete crap. I said, if you're an inner city mom in Detroit, you're not going to meet your family farmer. And she was dead silent.
Yeah.
She was in Northern California, where she could walk down the street to the stand and meet... Yeah. Forgetting that not only outside of California, but outside of all these other places, these people can't walk down the street and buy tons of organic produce for their 4, 5, 6 kids. They can't do it.
Here in Santa Barbara, you could do it 7 days a week if you wanted to, if you could follow the farmers markets. You could meet the farmers.
That doesn't happen in other cities, and people forget that. They forget that if you're struggling to make the rent and the health insurance and the car payment and the taxes, and you have to dress your kids, and you have $5 left, are you going to hit the McDonald's drive-thru and get 20 hamburgers for that, or are you going to get two heads of broccoli? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like it's yeah. frustrating to me, and that's goes
strangely
back
enough,
to,
it's a no-brainer from
right.
that standpoint.
Right.
Now, you used the analogy before, which I'm going to throw in here, because you talked about the youth and not having and having a deficient nutritional mm-hmm. intake each day. You used the analogy of a car. If you do not keep putting the right kind of fuel in the tank, what happens to the car? It stops running. We pulled into a car wash. We owned at the time a Volkswagen Jetta. Beautiful black car. And pulled in, went through the car wash, told the guy that it was, I don't think we actually said, a filler up. Okay. And they put diesel in.
Ooh.
It wasn't diesel.
Whoops.
And they ended up, of course, paying for the repairs. We actually started the car. She then realized what they had done because we could smell it, shut the car off immediately. And actually, it might have been the reverse. It might have been a diesel car, and they put gasoline. Same difference. And so when you don't have the proper fuel in the body, how in the world do you expect it to function? How do you expect your children to function?
Yeah.
How do the powers that be expect our society to not only function but flourish with new ideas? And they talk about new blood in business and government and this and that and the other and the other. Because what happens over the course of time, not so much with a car, because you can always fill the tank up again and you can go, but there's damage that's done mm-hmm. from childhood on up if you're not fed the nutrients that your body needs to function.
Yeah.
And in that case, as a child, to grow. Because you're really growing like crazy as a child, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where you're forming those connections in the brain. And that's where you're learning those basic things that lead you to learning more as you get older and older. And so if you're not sleeping well because you're hungry, or you had soda for dinner because that hypes you up, if all of those things that go back again to those five things I mentioned very first, if you're not getting those things as a kid...
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's going to happen? And I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I remember going with my dad the last time I was back through a little community in Pittsburgh where he actually grew up. And I'm looking around at these houses, and there are these big old brick, like you know inside they're like five bedrooms, and you know these really what could be really cool homes,
mm-hmm.
but one of the poorest sections. And you would see one where... All the windows were blown out, and there was clearly nobody living there. And then the one next door was half burned down, and the one next door was lived in, and there were people there. And then the three next to that were completely burned out. And how do you wake up in the morning and walk out into that neighborhood and change that?
Yeah.
When I saw a sign that said, hiring night manager at Wendy's, $7.50 an hour. That's for a night manager job.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
do you make that living?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not making a comment on the welfare system or, you know, how we need to take care of all it, but how do you get out of that? How do you
yeah,
break that cycle?
Exactly.
And I don't know the answer to that, but it saddened me because I'm like, how do they get out of that when
yeah.
that's what you wake up to every morning? Do you make different choices?
Yeah. When I first started working for my first commercial radio station, which was a Christian station, the minimum wage in 1980, I believe it was 80 that I started, was $3.65 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That was a minimum wage, okay? I worked for that station for 15 years. I don't know where minimum wage was 15 years later. What I can tell you is that my salary was $7.35 an hour when I left.
Wow.
It had doubled in 15 years. Now, this to me is a career. What I have been doing since 1979 when I got into this business, this is a career. I hear people argue, for example, a night manager at Wendy's thing. Well, yeah, but those aren't jobs that you want to keep for the rest of your life. That's why we don't need a minimum wage there, blah, blah, blah. And again, we don't want to go off into that tangent. But you're absolutely right. And there has to be a way for us to break that particular cycle. And, you know, it starts with each one of us. I mean, I live up on a piece of property and up on the mountain above Santa Barbara And if you travel around and you just look across the yards and what have you, there are a lot of places, and this is there's no secret to this, there are a lot of places up there, there's just trash everywhere. Mm-hmm. People just throw stuff wherever they want. They offload this or that or the other. Blue tarps cover what they don't want to see other than the blue tarp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just awful. So where we live, we probably occupy maybe an acre and a half, and we do everything we can to keep our area clear, not of burn material for in case of fires, but junk, garbage that's there. Because we don't like it around us.
Right.
It looks terrible. Even though we're renters, we still take pride in the area which we occupy. And then we're in the wilderness. So it's not like down in the city where you've got a landlord who maybe has a landscaping crew and or right. whatever to take care of a lot of this stuff. It doesn't exist up there. But it's really kind of sad that people don't take the kind of pride in where they live
mm-hmm.
up there, because everybody has that mentality of, I don't want to be connected to society, but boy, if there's a fire, I hope they'll show up. It's like, okay. And then, of course, I also think, too, of the environmental movement that argues against, you know, for example, putting in what they used to do was they'd put in these fire breaks.
Right.
You know, not during the fire season, but not while there were fires going on. There used to be one. It was like a reverse mohawk. When you mm-hmm. were driving up the 154 before you turned on a San Antonio Creek Road or San Antonio Creek before you crossed it, you could see this swatch and you just saw dirt
yep.
and trees on both sides. It's not there anymore because the environmentalists won't allow that to be there. That's what I've been told.
Mm.
Or there isn't the money, you know, whatever the case might be. But if we don't take care of ourselves, our own physical health and well-being, you know, what have we got?
Right.
And then what's the point? Why are you even bothering? I kind of joke about that with our intuition, which I find an extremely valuable tool if
yes.
we will but use it. You know, those promptings come for a reason.
Absolutely.
And I facetiously say, if you're not going to follow the promptings, why bother listening? Just stop listening. You know, although that's easier said than done, because they come in whether you're listening or not.
Right. And sometimes they're scary and we don't know what those are and we're not
yeah.
told to listen to
yeah.
those.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a phenomenal book called The Gift of Fear, which my husband, when we first started dating, handed me and he said, this is a requirement that you read this. I'm like,
ooh,
okay.
Wow.
And it's about listening to your intuition and specifically women who are targeted for whether it's rape or abduction or assault or, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I have a pretty good head on my shoulders. I grew up with a dad who taught me to kick butt if I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a fascinating book, and it was about listening to that intuition.
Yeah.
And it told story after story about women who got in the elevator with a man who made them feel uncomfortable, not for any other reason other than, oh, I just...
Yeah.
And then ended up not being very well after that.
Yeah.
But they were so worried about, well, I didn't want to hurt his feelings, or, oh, I didn't want to step out of the elevator. That would have looked weird, or, oh, I didn't want to say anything. They didn't listen to that intuition.
Yeah.
They were more concerned with what is he going to think. And it could have saved their life.
Mm-hmm.
How often have we had those promptings of, I'm not going to go when that light turns green yet. Vroom! And the car goes blowing through the red light. We have those all the time. That
yeah.
is that little whisper, that, and I call them prompting too, that little,
yeah.
those urgings
mm-hmm.
of, I would hang on for just a second.
Yeah.
We have to listen to that.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, it's going to really help us. And it's the same thing with our food. What are we craving? What do we want?
Yeah.
What do we need to have an optimum body? We have to make those choices. And that's
yeah.
what I talk about in the TEDx talk is changing your focus to something positive and making those good choices. That's what this is about.
You have traveled, I guess I could say extensively,
mm-hmm.
around the world to a lot of different places.
Yes.
Are you seeing the same kinds of issues in those other parts of the world in regards to health and well-being that you see in the West here in the States?
It depends on where I am.
Okay.
So when I was in Europe, so I was just in England and Scotland and yeah, kind of same stuff. I mean, they're eating sort of the same crap we are. It's very westernized. When I was in South Africa, I had talked to the company that brought me in. I did a talk on stress for a health and safety organization, sort of like their version of our OSHA.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, you guys probably don't need the nutrition talk because, you know, your food is so natural and you don't allow all this stuff. And they said, we have such an obesity and diabetic problem. I said, really? Now, this was in and around Cape Town and all that stuff. So they were starting to have that issue. One of the healthiest places I saw where I saw very little obesity and I saw just such joy. People are going to be surprised at this one. Such joy and such just... They were just happy to, they were just alive, and they just sort of was in the Middle East.
Oh, wow.
When I was in Egypt and when I was in Jordan, the food was so natural and so healthy, and probably the best fruit I have ever had in my life. Just carts going by and you just grab an orange off. In hindsight, I remembered, oh, I'm not supposed to be drinking water there having all this fresh produce. I didn't get sick. But yeah, it was literally afterwards I went, oh no, I wasn't supposed to be doing that. Oh well, I guess I'm okay.
Yeah.
Some of the happiest people, you know, there was enormous levels of what we would deem poverty, but they weren't like mad about it. They didn't have this sense of entitlement or expectation of miserable and I'm going to sit here and sell my coffee. And they would show up in the morning and they'd set up their little stand of stuff and people would buy stuff or not.
Yeah.
And they'd have tea with their friends and then they'd pack up their cart and they'd go home at the end of the day. And that was just what they did. And they seemed so happy and content with that. It was beautiful.
I remember talking with someone who had traveled to Africa, and they'd gone more into the interior, and they had met with small tribes, small villages, small communities, and they'd taken cameras with them, and I've seen documentaries about the villages throughout Africa in different areas. And the one thing that has always struck me is the clothing.
Mm.
It has almost everywhere, without exception, the clothing, and this is not in the developed cities, urban areas. The clothing was so bright and colorful.
Beautiful.
And just, and I'm going, was that done? I even asked, I says, was that done just for the cameras? When you guys showed up, they put on their finest and so forth. Oh, no, that's the stuff they wear all the time. And I said, really?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, wow. I don't know why that's so astounding to me. You know?
Yeah, there was such a joy in that society, too. And though I was at a very large conference in, it was at a sports lodge, maybe about 3 or 4 hours outside of Cape Town, but it was still in South, I mean, it was in the more established region. And we had a formal night. And I put on a very nice, simple black dress. And, you know, because it was work for me, I wasn't going to get too outrageous. But I put on a very nice dress, and people were in tuxes. And so many of the women were in those
very bright
garments,
vibrant,
with the bright colors and the head wrap. And oh my God, they were just, it was stunning. It was so beautiful. And that's, even on the day that I did my talk and they were just there for the conference, so many of them were in those colors and those materials. And it was just stunning. Such joy in that too. Amazing smiles.
Yeah.
Oh, the smiles in South Africa was just so incredible.
Let me ask you about environmental impacts. I'm not talking about the environment, but dovetailing off of what we're already talking about. In terms of the things that we surround ourselves with, like the colors of the clothing that we wear, the colors that we choose for whether it be the walls in our rooms of our homes or apartments or wherever it is we live, to the things that we fill on the floor, our apartments and our homes where we live, couches and chairs and tables and plates. In terms of the colors, in terms of what that does for us on a, I guess I would say, I want to say psychic, but more psychological level.
Yeah, there's a huge thing to that. People take great, put great effort in how they decorate, especially commercial spaces, if they're thinking, if they're conscious of it.
Mm-hmm.
The color of the walls changes mood. And in a lot of hospitals and like psychology offices, they pick specific colors that are soothing, that are calming, the blues, the greens. If you go into a fast food restaurant, the lights are bright, the chairs are uncomfortable, the colors are sort of assaulting because they want you in and out. They want to turn that table.
Right.
They don't want you to feel cozy and at home where you spend the day. And it's a nice, calming experience. They want you out because they want that table for the next people who are buying that thing. So all of that, if they're conscious of it. Now, we tend to do that completely unconsciously, too. We pick colors that are soothing to us. We pick outfits that are soothing to us. You know, I was at an event. This woman walks up to me and she goes, "You're a fall." And I looked at her and I went, "What?" because I haven't heard that whole thing in so long. She said, "You look so great in orange. You are a total fall, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, sure. I don't know if I'm a fall or not. I know I like bright, you know, I like the jewel tones. I like bright orange. I like, you know, I don't know what season that is, but yeah, okay, we'll go with that." So, you know, there's personality testing where I have a client who is obsessed with that where, you know, oh, you're a blue. You don't get along well with orange or, you know, whatever. And it's like, but we're people. Stop putting everyone into these four little categories of stuff. That's ridiculous. Yeah. You don't eat right for your type and you don't not like a certain other color. I mean, that's just, it just gets to be a little extreme sometimes.
When it comes to colors, my fall period was my 20s. I was wearing lots of browns.
Okay.
Lots of browns. Now I like wearing the brighter colors, even though today as we speak I'm wearing a gray shirt, but it's not a, at least from my perspective, it's not a sad looking gray.
No.
You know. I like wearing white shirts. Of course it's not bad when I'm wearing my black hat or a black shirt, and but I always wear, if I can find it, if I have one, a color coordinated t-shirt. And it was only when I moved here that I started wearing t-shirts under all my shirts.
Yeah.
I can't, I don't know what it is, but it's like, I just don't feel comfortable just wearing the shirt.
Yeah. And I like that look. I like the t-shirt under the shirt.
Yeah.
A good look.
Well, that's part of it too. That's part of it too, but it's just, it's comfortable. You know, I'm certainly not going to wear a black t-shirt under a white long sleeve dress shirt or Western shirt. That's
how very Miami Vice.
I know. Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, if it was pink, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Before we let you go, the website again is Kathy Gruver. That's KathyGruver.com.
That is correct.
And then it's also the Alternative Medicine Cabinet.com.
That's correct as well.
And you can get all the good information there. I don't think that I have ever asked you, I may have in previous shows, but it's been a long time since you've been on the program, so I've kind of grown and changed and mutated over this time. So I'm going to ask you these three questions before we wrap up the program.
Okay.
And I thank you so much for taking up so much time to share with us all these thoughts. As folks know, we've been all over the place, which goes to show your area of expertise in a lot of stuff. And if you don't know about it, you're going to research it.
Yeah, or I'll have an opinion on it.
Exactly.
I can have an opinion on pretty much anything.
All right, well, to those opinions, first question is, who is Kathy Gruver?
Kathy Gruver is an adventurous, only child, somewhat control freak, dancer, healer, trapeze artist.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work you're doing now?
Oh, I want to inspire people to make change. The best thing for them.
Okay. And what is your life's purpose?
I think it's a combination of making people laugh and educating them, giving them the knowledge that they need through fun and laughter so that they can make better choices.
It is also said, too, that people actually will retain that information if it's presented in a humorous fashion. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And people, I guarantee at least three laughs during my talks.
Very cool. I watched your TED Talk. I've watched a lot of TED Talks. Now, yours was TEDx. I'm not sure what the difference between that and the TED Talks are, unless it's the same thing. But I've often wondered, boy, that would be interesting to choose a subject, one subject, and stand up there for what, 8 to 15 minutes or whatever?
Yeah, there's a 8, 12, 15 is I think the choices you have,
And just expound. And I remember, and I go back to a program I was hosting back in Phoenix. It was a 1 hour, no commercials, no breaks, a show. We tried to get a hold of my guest, couldn't. My sister happened to be listening, said to my parents, well, what's he going to talk about for an hour? The hour goes by. And she's reported to have said to my parents, I can't believe he talked for a whole hour. You know, that would be fascinating. But I've heard from some folks that, you know, there's a great deal of preparation.
Yeah.
You've got to practice and practice and practice because it has to be fluid.
And it flies by.
And I'm sure it does.
Because I'm used to doing hour-long talks or four-hour workshops where I can stand there for 4 hours and talk.
Yeah.
Mine ended up being 14 minutes and 22 seconds, and I loved every second of it.
I could tell.
So proud of that
talk. Yeah, I could tell. You were having a blast up there, and it was almost, there was a part of me that was going, I don't think she wants this to end. She just wants to keep going. Talk more about another place. That's great. Well, thank you so much. And I encourage folks to get in contact with you, the alternativemedicinecabinet.com or kathygroover.com. We will be linked to one or both of those on the website. And again, thank you so much for joining us. And we will have you back on a more regular basis because we'll maybe focus on some specific things that you might be doing down the road.
Sure.
To get people inspired and get involved in.
Sounds good to me. Thanks for having me.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.